Welcome to Classic Value Investors. My name is Mariusz Skonieczny, and today it's Friday, May 3rd, 2013. I have with me John Chu. He has a website, csinvesting.org, and I thought it would be interesting to have him on. John, how are you?
Fine, thank you, Miriam.
John, I wanted to have you on because I recently learned about your website, csinvesting.org, and I thought it's an interesting one, and I like checking it out from day to day. And I wanted to chat with you about who you are, why you started the website, your experience in investing, because I think that my readers would benefit by checking out your website and learning from your experiences. So let me start with you, John. You have an interesting past. You've held various different jobs in the investment industry as well as outside of investment industry. So can you talk a little bit about this and how it helped you become an investor?
At csinvesting.org on the About tab, there's a little bit of background about me. But I started when I got out of school. I had a job to work overseas, and I traveled through Asia working on a boat and traveling overland through Asia for about a year and a half. And when I came back, I started working in the commodities business, sugar physicals for Mitsui USA. And from there, I got interested in futures, and that got me interested in markets. And then I wanted to work for myself, so I got I bought a seat for, oh, about $800 on the Open Board of Trade, which was called the Mid-Am Exchange. It no longer exists. And I became a floor trader for a few years out in Chicago, learning about how to trade in the pits. And I evolved as more of a fundamental long-term trader and was very fortunate to catch a boom in the soybean market. And I became more and more interested in understanding about markets. And I came back east from Chicago to be closer to family members, and then became interested, due to the Texaco bankruptcy, in equities, because there in the Texaco bankruptcy, I could see that the assets of the company were far above the worst case scenario in a bankruptcy. So I thought I would have more of an edge than just trading commodities against commercial traders like Cargill, and I'd have more of an edge. So I just studied on my own to learn about analyzing companies, and I got a job at two or three different small brokerage firms and learned about analyzing microcaps and also raising money for companies. However, you don't really learn how to value companies or about business on Wall Street. Wall Street is about selling and moving merchandise and raising money. There's a great book for those that want to know that Wall Street never changes. It's called Where Are the Customers' Yachts? But so I started there as a securities analyst and also an investment banker, and I raised, oh, about $5 million for a company called Actrade International, Actrade, and you could look it up on Google, but it was a fraud. And the lesson I learned is you can never know it all. There are always unseen risks. The good news of the story is that I raised money for the company, and my investors own stock at about $2.85, and the stock went to about $35, and I was pushing the CEO to break out the various lines of business, and he refused. And because of that, I had no choice but to sell and tell my clients to sell. So it was just sheer luck.
Why wasn't he interested in doing what you were saying? Because he was covering the fraud?
Well, Actrade had a trade acceptance draft product. It's like a post-dated check to help small businesses collect on their receivables. and get credit. It's like a bills of exchange, but used in the domestic market. And it took off, and Wall Street became very excited about the growth in this new product. And it was just the beginning of the internet age back in 95, 6, and 7. But a lot of the sales and profits were coming from international trade. It was a import-export company, one of the only few companies that was a public company. And investors wanted to know what were the true economics of the trade acceptance draft business, but the results were combined with the international trading business. And the CEO didn't want to do that because it would show the true profitability, which was that the trade acceptance draft business was losing money. Eventually, he fled the United States to Israel, and that's where he remains today.
Very interesting. And when you were working as an analyst for one of or several of these brokerage companies, were you in charge of, beside, you know, when you were raising money, were you in charge of like maybe writing investment reports and distributing them to various institutional clients?
Yes. If you want to get an idea of what it was like, look at the movie, see the movie Boiler Room. I mean, it was a higher level Boiler Room, but essentially the microcap world is a heavy sales world where you're selling clients on the excitement of making multiples of your money by investing in these small emerging companies. And also the focus is on what's going to happen in the next 6 months, not what is the true value of the company over the next 5, 6, 7 years.
I see. So you're pretty much saying that, you know, you're pushing the story, not necessarily what these things are worth.
Yes, you need a story to get people excited. Like if you were to, approach people about some of the small mining companies today, people would just hang up on you because the story is not a happy one. But where I really learned about to value businesses is when I started and helped start several businesses of my own, and then came back to wanting to invest for myself. But Wall Street is to predict the next quarter's earnings, which ironic is even if you could predict accurately the next quarter's earnings, it has no real effect on the underlying value of the company, positive or negative.
Right. And, you know, I find it interesting that, you know, so many analysts out there, you know, their job is to predict the next quarter. And, you know, I'm a business owner. I have, various different lines of business. And if you ask me how much money I'm going to make next quarter, I have no idea. And these are small businesses, and these guys are in charge of, you know, predicting the next quarter for, you know, eBay or, I mean, these companies. It's crazy to think you can actually do it when you're an outsider. Even insiders can't do it.
That's correct. If you have a small business, I mean, you do try to plan, but there are many things outside your control that you just try to be flexible and adjust to.
Right. Yeah, but that's the game that they play on Wall Street. When they miss it, the stock tanks, right? No matter what the business long-term value is.
Right. So investors out there want to use Wall Street to their advantage, and i.e. the volatility, they want to take advantage of that. So when there is a panic or a missed earnings and they have an understanding of the business, they want to take advantage of that and go the other way. Buy when there's a rapid sell-off because a company missed its earnings by a few pennies, but you believe the long-term value is there. So use it to your advantage, just as Buffett says. And that's why, if your listeners learn anything, it's just these three things. Think for yourself. No one knows the future. And incentives rule. So if you keep those three things in mind, well, then you're not going to be hurt by Wall Street, because Wall Street has incentives to sell. They're not going to guide you to what something is worth, and they don't know the future, and nobody else does either.
Right. So through your experiences, not too long ago, you started at CS investing. Did you tell me before it was like a year and a half ago that you started the site?
Well, what happened was is that when I came back, I started a business with my brother in Brazil selling tariff switching. It's building a substation to put a client on a lower tariff so they can lower their energy bill. And once that business was sold to a private equity firm, I came back to Connecticut where I live and wanted to start investing the money from the sale. And I read a picked up a book called You Can Be a Stock Market Genius by Professor Joel Greenblatt. And I looked him up on the internet and saw that he was teaching at Columbia. So I just hopped on a train one day, 45 minutes into to 125th Street, and walked over to Columbia and sat in the back of his class. And this was in 2000, and there was very little interest in value investing because it was the height of the internet bubble. And he graciously let me sit in the back of his class, and I sat in the back of his class for 4 or 5 years, just taking notes and learning about investing and investing my own funds. And then finally, I decided that it's so difficult to really learn how to invest if you're on your own. I figured I would start a site where people who, and here's the catch, they have to be willing to think for themselves and do their own work, but they could come to the site and download books, look at videos, learn about investing from accounting on up, and also learn through case studies because investing is something that you do. And you have to use case studies, and also you have to think about how you make decisions and how you apply the information to your situation.
That's very interesting. I don't think I ever heard anyone go to Columbia University and sitting in classes for 5 years.
Well, I would just go to the investment, several of the investment classes. Probably it's not allowed now, but it was at the graciousness of Professor Greenblatt because, ironically, in the old days when Graham was teaching his class, the majority of people in the class were not even matriculating at Columbia. They were professionals sitting in on the class. And the professionals would add a lot to the conversation because what I found in some of the classes is the Columbia students don't necessarily press the investment gurus that come to speak at the class. They're a little bit awestruck, but I was very, very fortunate.
I see. But now, when you analyze companies, you look at them individually, but also what I get from your site is that you also take your time to understand how the economy works. Can you elaborate a little bit on this and what your philosophy is on the economy?
Well, unfortunately, predicting the economy is very difficult, but I'm a student of Austrian economics to try to understand the distortion that is occurring. I mean, unfortunately, we live in a system of manipulated interest rates, fiat currency. And if you think about it, when you invest, you take a dollar out of your pocket and then you convert that dollar into an investment in a security, either a bond or an equity. And then at the end of your investment, you sell that bond or equity, and then it comes back to you in a dollar. And what that dollar can buy is what really concerns you, your real returns. And so I think you really have to be aware of monetary policy and the distorted interest rates because without understanding what's going on, how do you really normalize earnings? For example, profit margins, I think, are 10 or 11% of GDP at all-time highs, primarily due to the easy money and the weak economic conditions, i.e. there's not much wage demands now, and there's very wide profit margins, but I don't see that as a sustainable situation, so I'm very cautious on what I consider sustainable earnings.
So what do you see? As you mentioned, we live in an age where interest rates are manipulated or kept artificially too low. Do you think that's sustainable, or do you think in the future this situation will have to change?
Well, if you look at what's going on, if you go to the St. Louis Fed and look at their charts, the adjusted monetary base is skyrocketing. It's increasing as the Fed keeps buying bonds to monetize the debt. The money is going to the banks, but the banks aren't lending the money at the same rate that they're receiving, that they're getting the excess reserves. So they're either buying bonds themselves or just letting it sit there to earn their 0.25%. If they were lending the money, you would see price inflation probably at a much higher higher rate. But it tells me that there's malinvestment. These ultra low interest rates are punishing savers, and they're causing people to reach for yield and make riskier investments than they normally would, and it's going to come to tier. So you see the effect of in the stock market. For instance, companies that I would love to own, like Clorox or Procter & Gamble or General Mills franchises, they're trading at a very high valuations, I believe. I mean, they're excellent companies, they're franchises, but your future returns are going to be very low. So ironically, this has pushed me into the most beaten up sector of the market, which is gold and gold mining shares. I normally would not be an investor in mining companies, but it's where I see the most value. Franchises have been bid up, and I don't know how long that will go. But if I can tell if I can't get a good future return, I stay away from that sector of the market.
So what brought? How did you make the decision to go into the mining sector?
Well, two things. One, I do believe gold is money. It's ironic, instead of people saying the gold price went down, you could say, well, the dollar price of gold went up today, or vice versa. I tend to look at things in terms of the gold price, because to me, that is the real non-fiat currency. So in other words, if I take the S&P divided by the gold price, I don't think we're in much of a real bull market. But anyway, with negative interest rates, negative real interest rates or extremely low interest rates, I think it's a good environment to be holding gold. It doesn't cost you much in the carry to hold gold. And also the cheapest sector of the market are mining shares. So for example, there's some companies, albeit each company has risk. I think one company that I'm looking at, Seabridge, symbol SA, if you download their presentation, you can see that their enterprise value per ounce of proven and probable is about $10 to $11 per share. That's extremely cheap. However,
you mean per ounce, not per share?
Yeah, per $11 enterprise value per ounce, yes.
Yeah, okay. Just wanted to make that clear.
And but of course, they have to get further financing. They have 46 million ounces. They have to get that out of the ground. All I'm saying is that is a huge spread from the current price to the price that they're valued at. But you have to diversify. You have to look at to make sure that the company is well financed, that management is skilled, that they have ownership in the company, et cetera, et cetera. But I find that there are companies like that in this sector that I can't find anywhere else. So,
well, I agree with you. I do think that the mining shares are cheap, and you know, I'm a value investor. I don't really care if I go after the miners or I go after the service companies. But I made the same came to the same conclusion that, you know, normally I would not necessarily be invested in companies like this, but they are just so disgustingly cheap that I just, you know, from these price points, I just, you know, can't figure out how you can actually lose money on them long term, assuming you picked you know, the right ones, because, you know, there is a lot of bad companies out there that, you know, will go to zero no matter what the price of gold does in the future.
Yes, you have to diversify, because mining is essentially a very, very risky business, and there are a lot of unforeseen risks. The other thing that drew me to the companies is that I began to see some very intelligent investors that normally would not be invested in this sector, people like Baupost and Seth Klarman and Weiss Asset Management, a few value investors that I really respect, that I've never really seen some of these companies pop up in their portfolio, and I'm starting to see that. So it's another confirmation of that some smart money sees value as well. But like anything, it's not easy to make money, and you have to be patient, and you suffer emotionally when you know, your stocks are sitting there or going down while everyone is partying, while the market makes a new high. But that's the life of a value investor.
Yes, I totally agree. Well, John, thank you very much for taking the time and chatting with me. I'm doing this interview because, if you're listening to this, I think John's website is very valuable. Jot it down, csinvesting.org. Go to it, learn from it. You can email him with questions or with comments, and I think that you will find his website beneficial. So once again, John, thanks a lot for chatting.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.